Most people who went through Hurricane Andrew define their lives as before Andrew and after Andrew. Everyone who went through the storm has a story. This is mine. My experiences, good and bad, sparked a deep fascination with disasters and the remarkable individuals who restore order amidst the turmoil. Both the victims of disasters and those who help them pick up the pieces all triumph over adversity and are a testament to the human spirit. I'm Kevin Peterson, and this is Weather Heroes. In the pre-dawn hours of August 24th, 1992, Hurricane Andrew unleashed its might on southern Dade County, now known as Miami-Dade County. With wind gusts roaring up to 177 miles an hour, it was a force that would rewrite history. History for the residents of Greater Miami, the state of Florida, and many industries. It left a trail of devastation throughout the county, especially in communities like Homestead, Cutler Ridge, Perrine, and Kendall. No one really understood how powerful Hurricane Andrew was going to be until it was too late. In fact, just a few days before landfall, the National Hurricane Center almost wrote its last advisory for Andrew because the system was so disorganized. But that quickly changed.
Okay, now we have Dr. Bob Sheets at the National Hurricane Center. Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. We put the hurricane watch up now for the Florida East Coast. At what point are you anticipating that somewhere along that coast we'll be experiencing at least tropical storm force winds?
Well, we're looking at putting up a warning probably sometime tomorrow morning with this movement that we have right now. The earliest that we would see tropical storm force winds along our coast would be sometime Monday morning.
All right, but possibly early Monday morning, right?
Well, it could be, and it depends on whether you've got 13 knots of movement or 11 knots of movement. So one or two knots when you're looking 48 hours into the future makes quite a bit of difference in time. So we're looking at sometime in early morning, perhaps.
Just 2 days before making landfall, Andrew rapidly strengthened into a Category 5 hurricane, one of only four to hit the U.S. Hurricane warnings were issued for Andrew, but there's little time left to prepare. With Andrew's approach, Miami braced for impact. Supplies quickly dwindled. Basics like wood, batteries, food, and water became scarce as people frantically prepared. The county organized evacuations under an extremely tight timetable, while they also opened shelters for those needing a safe place. The county did an amazing job putting it all together with such little time. The roads were choked with traffic as thousands of people desperately headed north, north to escape. There was gridlock everywhere as people panicked.
The operative numbers here are the wind speed and the direction of movement. Wind speed at 150 miles per hour. We cannot stress enough for anybody that thinks they've been through a hurricane. This is like no other hurricane ever recorded here in a metropolitan area.
And not just Florida.
Not
anywhere.
Just Florida. Anywhere. There have been other hurricanes in the Pacific, but not affecting cities. On the United States coast, there have been other hurricanes.
No one has ever lived through, been through a storm
like this in a major metropolitan area.
My wife and I decided to remain in our CBS block home. In retrospect, not the wisest decision. But we did feel safe there, and we had jobs that would require us to be available soon after the storm. The gridlocked roads were not very conducive to an evacuation anyway. Our 2.5-year-old daughter and some of my in-laws were with us. The sky was clear, and the mood was almost festive. It started slowly. The wind caused the attic cover to keep popping open, blowing insulation all over the carpet. I taped the lid shut, and we continued to watch the news. We could hear the wind blowing outside, but it wasn't too alarming. The power was on, the TV worked, things seemed more or less normal. Then we noticed the front doors were bowing inward. They almost seemed alive. Now that really got our attention. We quickly tied the handles together, and the situation suddenly seemed serious. Much more serious. Then suddenly it happened. The 8-foot-wide kitchen window was blown in. The wind was screaming through the opening, fierce rain coming in horizontally. The vertical window carvings were coming loose, turning into projectiles, striking the opposite wall and cabinets, embedding themselves into the drywall and scarring the cabinets terribly. We grabbed a couple of mattresses and used them to shield ourselves as we huddled together and shuffled into the master bedroom closet. We tried to make a game of it for my small daughter. For the next few hours, we listened to bricks and debris hitting the wall and the roof. There were large boom-like noises, almost explosions. And sometimes, the house shuddered. The wind was so loud, it often sounded like the proverbial freight train that tornado survivors talk about. By now, our power was long gone. We listened to updates on a small transistor radio. Thank goodness for that radio. There should be one in every hurricane kit. Another concern we had was that my wife was pregnant. We had heard tales of hurricanes inducing labor. The baby that went through that hurricane is now my son. And no, his name is not Andrew. Ironically, my mother was pregnant with me when she and my father went through Hurricane Donna, which struck Miami in 1960. Finally, after many hours, silence fell. We emerged from the closet into a changed world, our home destroyed. There was a gaping hole where the dining room and kitchen had been. A large beam had come through the roof, landed in the kitchen, and caused extreme damage everywhere. There were busted windows, soaked carpets, holes in drywall, you name it, you imagine it, it happened. But none of this really compared to the sight we saw as we walked outside. The neighborhoods surrounding ours were flattened as far as the eye could see. Comparisons to scenes of World War I and World War II devastation flashed through my head and don't really do it justice. Out of the hundreds of homes that we could see, none were intact and very few were standing. In fact, pieces of those homes were in my yard. They had come through my roof. This is literally the most sobering sight I have ever seen in my life. We all just looked in silence. There are no words to try to understand or explain what we saw. So, our survival instincts kicked in. We inventoried what remained of our home. The discovery of a coffee urn, unbroken, with hot coffee inside was a small victory. And let me tell you, that coffee tasted great. Two of my brothers-in-law came from further north of us, checking to see if we had survived. We gathered what we could salvage and made our way north through the rubble and flooded streets. I remember driving past a mobile home park. The homes were wrapped around trees and foam poles, like tinfoil. It was utter devastation. We saw people meandering through the streets lost. It felt like the end of everything, and there was a general feeling of hopelessness. Now came the hard part, recovery. So I'm going to set the scene a little more so you can better understand the challenges that faced the community.
FP&L is advising us, which really comes as no surprise, that they're warning folks to expect your electricity to be off for a week. If you lose electricity, a week is what the ballpark figure that they're throwing out. And from what you have said, that would not be at all unusual.
No, as a matter of fact, just to say again, in Hurricane Betsy, the power was out in parts of the city here for about 8 days, and Hurricane Betsy was not even a hurricane in Dade County, except in extreme southern Dade County, but in Miami, Coral Gables, it was not of hurricane force. So, and that was 8 days, although we have, I guess, made some advancements in that area since then, but still.
The power was out everywhere. In some places, there is no power for weeks. This is August in Miami, one of the hottest months, often the hottest. No AC, no air conditioning, no fridge, nothing. There's also zero to little phone lines. The old landlines, they were either knocked out or overloaded. Cell service, in its infancy, was not working at all. There's nothing so frustrating as an all circuits are busy message, along with the maddening sound that accompanies it. There are no stores open within 50 miles, and those that were open had empty shelves. Ice was hard to find and very expensive. People drove 3 or 4 hours north to find supplies, competing with others from Miami. All communications were done in person, which meant driving everywhere, except there's very little gas since the pumps couldn't work without power. Few gas stations had survived anyway. Every decision to drive had to be weighed between the use of gas versus the possible benefit. The trees were stripped bare of any leaves. Apartment buildings were shorn in half, looking like exposed dollhouses. Animals had escaped the zoo and the aviary had blown away. Exotic birds were showing up everywhere, as were reports of cheetahs, monkeys, and other escapees. Even today, you can find parrots and peacocks roaming around. The Homestead Air Force Base was destroyed, as was the fleet of planes kept there. There was widespread looting. Homeowners were camping out in front of their damaged homes with guns. Neighborhood watch groups were formed. It was a very lawless feeling environment. At some point, the National Guard showed up and they set up a base in Cutler Ridge. They also helped set up a semi-permanent shelter where the newly homeless hurricane victims could live. The list of bizarre things is very long. Life, as we were accustomed to, had disappeared. Chaos was everywhere, and no one knew exactly what to do. And the situation was grim. The county, the community, needed help.
And if we don't get food and water down there, the casualty rate is going to go much higher. So I would like everybody who has a role to play above Dade County in getting stuff down here to do whatever it takes to get done and to quit playing the games that are being played.
Slowly, the state and federal governments responded, and the nation's heart opened. Bit by bit, chaos began to dissolve. In the midst of all the bedlam, all the craziness and despair, I witnessed the birth of community spirit. Miami, believe it or not, was not known as a friendly town. Yet, strangers became Good Samaritans, and organizations, old and new, became lifelines, and companies became benefactors, helping their employees, the community, and rebuilding their businesses. Post offices became community centers as people lined up to collect their mail. New friends were made. Neighborhoods banded together. In fact, the organization Neighbors for Neighbors started then and still exists today. It would be impossible to list all the challenges or the many people that were involved in their response and recovery. People from across the nation and the citizens of Miami worked as one. There have been many hurricanes before, but not like Andrew. It changed so many things, not just for Miami, but across the U.S. How everyone prepares for hurricanes, building codes, insurance practices, mitigation efforts, the list is long. Andrew also ignited my passion for the excitement and reward of giving back to the community in times of disaster. That feeling carried me through decades of working in the catastrophe business. I've had the privilege of meeting so many wonderful unsung heroes, the many people who help organize the chaos that is the disaster response and recovery world. These champions need to have their stories told, and that's why I do this. These are the weather heroes.